As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Instead of having a strong period and building on it and continuing to do the things that we had done well, I thought we just overdid it. It was just really immature all the way through our game. I thought it was immature from our most experienced players and our leaders. Hated lots about our game tonight, and hopefully the players hated just as much or more than I do.
Good afternoon, James. We have a lot to talk about, right?
Yeah, it feels like it's been a long time. Feels like we're long delayed.
Yeah, I was tracing back the games that have gone by, and it's quite a few. Like that Edmonton game now feels like it was like a lifetime ago, and it really wasn't. It was Saturday.
How are you feeling about like where we're at in the season? Like they got 11 games left. For me, these are always like the dog days of the season, and it's just like I remember like even when, you know, traveling around and being at the games, it's like, man, this game doesn't mean anything, and they're playing a team that's out of it, and like I don't know, it's feels like it's dragging a little bit to me.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way a bit, but for me, like they still have, for me, like, and I imagine the coaches feel this way, they still have a lot to figure out and they don't really have a ton of time to do it, and the injuries now are starting to hit in a way that would be a little concerning just with how close the playoffs are. Obviously Mitch Marner has been out, he's getting closer to coming back. Calle Järnkrok isn't close from what I can tell. Morgan Riley's now out. You know, Joel Edmondson's out. They just like it's starting to kind of pile up, and you really do need to figure out some things about the roster. But that clip we played off the top is Sheldon Keefe from the New Jersey game. After the New Jersey game, he was not happy. That was a 6-3 loss. It's a game they should have won but didn't win. What was your reaction to how strongly Keefe came out after the game? Like if you watch the clips versus just reading the quotes, it's a little different. Like it doesn't sound as bad when you actually watch it, but what he says is what he says. And like, it is a pretty strong statement to make and something he really hasn't done a lot of as the head coach of the Leafs.
Yeah. I'm surprised at like putting names to some of the criticisms, because normally it's kind of more generic, right? Like, and sometimes he'll say, you know, like our leaders, remember the game against Colorado? He said something like their stars were in another class from our stars, yes, kind of thing. And, yep, and you know who he's talking about. And, but to actually like say, you know, John Tavares, you know, and then yeah, I can't think of another time he's done that with Tavares.
Never that I can recall.
Yeah. It's very interesting. And now behind closed doors, you know, they've had lots of talks with Tavares over the years about, you know, making better plays with the puck and being a better defensive and two-way player. And, you know, and I know he's worked on those things. And so like, it's not like this is like out of the blue that they would, you know, it's not like a new issue. It's not something that Tavares would be caught off guard by, but to put it out into the public is interesting.
Yeah. You don't often hear, I guess you hear that maybe, you know, in some other teams, but again, player specific is a little different. And to your point, like it's different with Tavares because Keefe has been very reluctant to do anything like that. And I'm guessing like there's good reason for that. Like he probably feels like he doesn't really need to do that. Like for Tavares personally, like, you know, he would know the mistakes he's making and calling him out publicly is not going to do anything. I guess that would be the thinking in past years, but there's also the argument that if you're going to make others accountable, you should really start at the top, you know, and if you're going to, you know, scratch David Kampf on December 30th, if John Tavares makes a play like Kampf made to get scratched, you better also make sure you're holding him accountable too. Like it can't just be Kampf and like third liners and fourth liners. You know what I mean? Like you have to kind of make it fair. And if you're going to get a message across to your team, I kind of think it's a good way to do it. Don't you? Like I thought of the John Tavares or the John Tortorella stuff from last week with Sean Couturier, just in that you do something like that. And Keith used the words, like it gets the attention of your team. What is going to get the attention of the team more than by name calling out the captain of the team? Do you agree? Or do you think it was too far?
I guess we'll see if it works or not. Right. Like I think that's like yeah. If pushing these buttons is getting the desired, that's what people were saying about the Couturier thing with Tortorella. It's like, you know, if it ends up being a motivating thing and Couturier comes back and plays better and the team rallies around it and uses it, then okay, well played, you know. But I think as a coach, you want to be calculated when you do these things. And, you know, I think, like you said, looking back at the games, like we could even just go through the game since we last did a show, kind of all over the place, right? Like like bad loss, good win, bad loss, you know, schedule loss against Carolina. Like kind of, I would say they played two bad games, two good games, and one where it was like they didn't play great, but they were playing one of the best teams in the league on the second night of a back-to-back. They've been missing some players.
Yep.
But it just kind of, I would say like on the whole, other than like the first two periods against Edmonton where they were fantastic, they've been pretty mediocre. And I think if you're Sheldon Keefe and you're looking at it and, you know, they're almost certainly going to make the playoffs and they're almost certainly going to finish in the 2-3 spot in the Atlantic. And it's one of those things where I think, you know, some of like what I'm feeling watching the games, it's like, you know, the stakes don't feel very high. I'm sure that that's what some of the team is feeling, and they're probably feeling fatigue as well. And Sheldon Keefe is trying to rattle some cages and say, hey, wake up. Let's play better than this.
Yeah. And you could kind of feel it going that way before the game. Like he had brought up exactly what you're talking about. He brought up the Philadelphia game actually. And he just talked about like slippage in their game and he didn't want to see that happen again. And then it kind of happened. Like it didn't start out that way against Jersey. Like they played great in that first period. They completely dominated, but then it starts to slip. And you have to think, like, if you're Keith, you're getting close to the playoffs, you really don't want that kind of stuff creeping in, those kind of decisions, you know, the lack of awareness in some situations, what you're doing with the puck. You don't want that to start to creep into your game now, like right before the playoffs. And so I do think it's a good idea to kind of call attention to that. But yeah, you're right. Like it will be the response. But I think if you look the last few months, they've gotten the response. Like he's been doing this a lot more the last few months than I really think he did the first 4 years or four seasons that he was the coach. Like you think back to the time where he doesn't play the power play. He scratches like the entire first unit for one power play. He benches Tavares and Bertuzzi in the third period. Like he's been doing more of this stuff. And for the most part, since like the middle of January, they played pretty well, especially with some of the injuries. So yeah, you're right. Like it's again, like Keefe is in such an interesting spot. Like he got the extension, but it still doesn't really feel like he's going to be safe if they don't find a way to go on a deep playoff run. Like, I guess you can't rule anything out given what's happened with this team over the years and how they've kind of managed personnel. But man, you know what I mean? Like he's got to really press every button he thinks he can press, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think this is Sheldon Keefe's last stand here if it doesn't go his way. Right. So, you know, if some of the relationships get a little bit frayed, but he gets the result he wants on the ice, then he has to do that. You know, he has to attack this complacency. And, you know, you see it every year in the NHL. The season's so long. There's so many games. There's injuries. There's travel. There's, you know, all kinds of stuff. And coaches often have to, they're the ones that are constantly saying, and we've seen Keefe say it in previous years too. It's like, this matters, you know, like we need to like pay attention. We need to not fall into the trap. And the Leafs have so much offensive talent that they can often win games where they don't show up for the first 10, 15 minutes of the game, or where they don't play a consistent effort all the way through, or We've seen it for years. But the thing is that, and I think they've struggled with this in the past, is that flipping a switch is hard. Like you can't just, like, I understand why human nature is the way that it is, that you wait until the playoffs and you kind of sleepwalk through the end of the season because there's not a lot to play for. But then you're going to be right into a war right away. And I think the Leafs have been caught off guard in the past, you know, and not been ready to go on game one of the playoffs. So I'm sure that that's what Sheldon keeps thinking here.
Well, and to your earlier point, like we're recording this on March 27. They're probably tired of him. He's probably a little bit tired of them. Like you're at that point in the season where it's like, come on now. Like you said, you want to get to the playoffs. Season's been long, 70-ish games. And you know what, James? Like, I know we obviously focus closely on the Leafs, but this happens around the league. Like, I was just reading Fluto's story about the Bruins, where Jim Montgomery, at a practice, or maybe it was a morning skate, tells his team to wake the F up. And, like, he's not happy with their play right now as the playoffs get closer. Like, it happens. And I think, like, you're worried, if you're Keefe, that there's, like, a contagious effect of the decisions that some of your star players make affecting other guys. Like if Matthew Nyes sees, you know, Austin Matthews trying to make a play and turn the puck over, maybe he thinks it's okay that he can try to make that same play. And then he turns the puck over and then it's a playoff game. And then it costs you a game. Like Max Domi's turnover at the end of that game against Jersey, like that we've seen that end games for the Leafs in important games. Like you can't make those decisions. And so, you know, we look at Boston as a team that has like this cultural fabric where that kind of stuff is kind of built in, and you know, they've done a good job here of building that, but like you don't want it to slip right now. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they respond.
I think the other thing too for this group in particular is no one really cares where they finish during the regular season. Like this doesn't, it doesn't matter. I mean, all the players know and everyone knows that they're going to be judged on what happens in the playoffs. I mean, they've lived through this before. They've had really great regular seasons. I think they finished fourth the last 2 years and if you lose in the first round, no one's going to be like, oh, well, they finished fourth. So this year, I mean, they're 10th in the league and points percentage right now. That's probably as good a team as they've been on balance for the season. And if they win two rounds, no one's going to, you know, it's going to be a more successful season than they've had in a long time.
No, to your point, I actually remember, I think it was the 21-22 season. I hope I'm remembering this right, but they came into camp basically saying, we're going to make the regular season really matter. We're going to treat it like it's, like we're trying to set ourselves up for the playoffs. They had 115 points, fourth in the league, most in franchise history. And then what happens? They lose in the first round of Tampa. They probably outplay Tampa in that series, but they lose. Nobody talks about that regular season because why would they, right? Like the regular season doesn't matter. But the only thing I would counter with is they're getting to a little bit of a vulnerable-ish position, depending on how you feel about it, where Tampa's like not that far back and they play Tampa next week.
4 points back. Yeah.
Right. Like that's,
and they have the tiebreak too, right?
Right. Well, and they play Tampa twice more. So we'll see what happens with that. So like they could lose their lead entirely in not a short amount of time. And then you're facing, I don't know, who would you face in the first round? I guess you would fight Boston at this point.
If the Rangers win the conference, they're in first right now, then you would still get Boston or Florida. So yeah. Even if Tampa passes them, it doesn't change anything. So make that mean something to, you know, a star player in the NHL who's tired and, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm just making excuses for them, but.
No, I think that's real. I think urgency can be hard to manufacture, but like they've had like that Edmonton game. That's a really impressive game. Like, obviously I think that game shouldn't get close-ish. Where it I guess it didn't really get that close, but that's a really impressive win given the players that they're without. Given, you know, Edmonton comes in that game and they're just like, we're going to load up our top line. McDavid, Dreisaitl, Hyman. And the Leafs, like, they use the Tavares line against them eventually. And they just win. You know, they score six goals. They get depth scoring. Samsonov plays well until he gets hurt, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
They outclassed them in the first 40 minutes of the game. Like, yeah, that was one totally. Of their, I was watching and I was like, this might be their best game of the year. And then the third period, they undid a bunch of that. And then you're like, well, it was still a pretty good game because they won. But this team, like when they hit the high notes, they look really, really impressive, especially with the absences that they've got.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, maybe we'll say that actually for a different show.
But when they don't look impressive, then they can look pretty bad. They can look like, you know, kind of like they did against New Jersey. Like, I mean, now they carried the balance of play against New Jersey, but I just mean in terms of like the dumb brain farts that they made in that game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like we've seen, like at playoff time, like that's what kills you, right? Like. Even just like I had a conversation with Max Domi not that long ago, just about playoffs and everything. And that was one of the things he brought up in Dallas last year, where it's just like they were playing well, and then they made some mistakes and they were done. And it's just like, that's how it goes. And with all that's at stake for this team, that can't happen. And
series are short and all the games, a lot of the games are decided by one or two goals. And, you know, so one mistake or one missed save from your goalie and, you know, look at the Florida series last year. Like, you know, they lose two really close games to start the series. Yeah. All of a sudden, they're behind the eight ball. They don't play well in game three, and that's you're done. Like, you're not coming back from that. So,
well, you know, I do think. Sorry, James. Before we get to the goalies, they are starting to really feel not having Marner. Like that has been stamped home. I'm writing about that for tomorrow, so it's very top of mind for me. But it's like kind of obvious. You take one of the best two-way players in the league, one of the three best players on this team off the team for a few weeks, and like it has an impact. And suddenly guys that aren't as good as Marner are playing more minutes. And you know, there's just like this whole trickle-down effect in like every situation where not having Marner does hurt. So
you just take like all the people that have been out of the lineup and like add up how much salary that is that's not there. Like you can include, yeah, like Yarncroc, Marner, Riley, Samsonov,
Klingberg.
Well, I mean, Klingberg's they've been better since he's been out of the lineup.
Yeah. Okay. So you're talking now or more recently.
I just mean like guys that are like you are expecting to be in your playoff lineup. I mean, it's close to, you know, $20 million. So
yeah, I have them at well over 200 games missed injury, but obviously Klingberg is like almost 60 of those, but still.
Yeah. If you include the numbers I saw, the Leafs were in the top. They're certainly in the top 10 in man games lost, if you want to include Klingberg. So,
We should talk about the goalies. We do have to talk about TJ Brody. We'll talk about, we should talk about William Nylander hitting some career marks and, you know, how he's been playing. Matthews and Domi, I want to get into the penalty kill. But I think we should start with the goalies. We mentioned Samsonov in that Edmonton game. I just came back from practice. He says he's fine. He said he hurt his calf sliding, I think, and hitting it on the post, from what I can understand. Mm-hmm. And so he says he's ready to go.
That's not really what it looked like, was it? It looked like it was tore his groin or something like that.
Yes. And I think I'm guessing that's what Sheldon Keefe thought, because that's kind of what he mentioned after the game, that he thought it was much worse. And then Samsonov said he was fine. What do you make of like this happening not irregularly, where it's like something happens and it looks like it's really bad? It just, to me, James, like, I don't know if you feel this way. It just lends more to the, like, you just don't feel really comfortable with him at any point. Like, you just feel like you're always one thing away. And obviously, he's fine in this instance. He had that morning skate apparent injury, which was nothing in the end. But it's just always feels like a little nerve-wracking, I would think, if I was the Leafs. Do you think that's fair? Or?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to, like, I don't know what he was feeling hurt in the moment, right? So like,
yeah, no, like I'm not saying he's wrong or like he did anything wrong, but like it just adds to this feeling of uncertainty with him and instability with him, where it's like you just never know, like you just don't feel like you're going to be able to count on him. Like there's something is going to come up. Is kind of how it feels to me.
You know what's funny is that it feels like to me with the goalies right now, it's like every week there's like a different take. Like Wall has a good game and everyone's like, oh yeah, he's going to be the starter for sure. And, you know, and then Samsonov plays a couple good games. Oh, you know, Samsonov's going to be the starter for sure. It's like, we're just going to have to see what happens here. Like, I don't think there's a hot take that makes sense with the goalies right now where, you know, which one you're going to be. They're probably, if they're going to go deep in the playoffs, I bet you both these guys play games. I bet you they both start games if they're going to go three or four rounds. So, you know, we'll see what happens over the last 11 games. I've got Samsonov in my fantasy pool, in the Athletic fantasy pool. I'm in the playoffs right now. It's very tense. So I hope that he gets some starts here down the stretch. Otherwise I'm in trouble. So that's my personal bias there.
Well, he's not playing on Thursday. I would guess he'll play on Saturday in Buffalo, but we'll see. But to me, like, it kind of feels like it's going to come right down to the end. Like, just whoever's playing better. Like, they end the season on a back-to-back, which is sort of interesting. Like, you wonder...
Isn't their schedule down the stretch, like, really cramped up? Like, there's, like, all kinds of... They're going to have to sit a whole bunch of people here down the stretch. Like, there's going to be some load management going on.
Well, so these are the games, like just the last week and change. They play the 8th, they play the 9th, they play the 11th, they play the 13th, they play the 16th, and they play the 17th. So like, I would think, but like, who knows? Like maybe Martin Jones plays game 82. I don't know. Or maybe they want the starter to play because like the playoffs might not start for a few days.
So 6 games in the last 10 days to end the year.
It's a lot. Like, it's not great.
Including having to go down to Florida. A back-to-back where they play at home and then go to New Jersey the next night.
Yeah,
it's not a good schedule. They're gonna have to go like, I mean, you can't go split squad because you don't have enough players. But I wonder if they can. I don't know. I wonder if they have the cap space to like call some guys up from the Marlies or something to play some of these games.
Well, and it kind of feels like Do you think like it feels a little to me like they keep opening the door for one guy? And then something happens, and then like Joseph Woll, for example, obviously starts that second game in Carolina as expected, second half of back-to-back. Samsonov has his issues, so he gets to start in Jersey, and then it doesn't go well for him. And it's like, well, they're going to play him obviously again against Washington, but it's like they kind of keep giving these guys some opportunities to kind of just like, I don't know, like lock it down, and it's not really happening. Like to me, James, I kind of think Wall really has to outplay Samsonov by a lot to be the guy to start, and maybe to start doesn't really matter. Do you think that's in Wall? Like, do you think he missed too much time? He's lost his rhythm. He's too inexperienced. Like, where are you at with him? Like, he still is like, I don't even think he's played 40 games in the NHL total.
Right. That's a very significant injury for a goalie. Everyone I talked to. So he was hurt December 2nd.
7th, then, I believe.
Okay. His last decision was December 2nd.
Yeah, he was hurt in Ottawa December 7th.
Okay. That was where Jones got the win after he came out. So December 7th, he doesn't come back and play until February 29th. So it's a huge stretch. I mean, misses almost most of December, all of January, basically all of February. He's out. I mean, it takes time to come back from that. We've seen that with skaters, and I think even, you know, more so for goalies, especially with a high ankle sprain. You know, he's played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. What's he played? 7 games since he's been back. It's going to take more than that. And they're running out of runway for him to, that's why I'm saying, like, I don't think you can make a definitive statement. Like Wool's going to have to be so good to push Samsonov out, because we need to see how the last 11 games play out here. Like, I think it's going to matter how they're playing and whoever you feel really good about going in.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, just because of the inexperience, to me, like if it's like pretty even in that last week, I would think Samsonov likely starts game 1. But if Wall is like clearly, like you remember in December, I guess it was early December, he was starting to play really well. And it was like, this guy's taking the net, and he gets hurt. And then obviously everything happens after that. But yeah, like it's going to come right down. Like he just, I mean, like you look at his game since he's come back, beats Arizona, two not good Boston games where he gives up four each. The Washington game, you know, Washington didn't really have much. He gives up three, plays really, really, really well in Carolina. But as Sheldon Keefe noted the other day, he does give up a goal in the first shot of the game. Gives up a goal in the first shot of the game against Jersey, ends up giving up five. Like, it's just been kind of up and down. And to your point, like, maybe that's just to be expected given how much time he missed. But
I do think the inexperience, too, has to be noted because it
has to,
you know, yeah. The way that Wall gets talked about sometimes in it, like, I think everyone wants him to be the guy and wants it to be this homegrown, drafted, developed goalie. They like him as a person. They like the backstory. They like the way he looks in the net. But you can't skip steps, you know, like he's not established yet, you know,
at all.
So
I'm looking at it.
He's a little bit like he's established himself to the point that he's in the NHL and he should be, but.
Okay. Well, I just pulled this really quickly. Of the active goalies who played this year, I count 119. He is 86th in starts with 30. In the NHL.
Right. So his career numbers, you mean?
Yes. So he's played three more games than Devon Levi. Like he's played in his career nine more games than Eric Schallgren did. Like he really just isn't very experienced. So
yeah,
that's part of it.
And too. I get it that like people are cheering for the guy and want him to,
sure.
You know, and he's, I have a hard time seeing Samsonov being back. So Wool's going to be someone, you know, who's going to be in the net next year with, who knows who?
You think he can make that determination yet? Like, what if Samsonov goes on some crazy run in the playoffs? Like, I guess maybe he would be too much. They wouldn't want to pay him. I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think. I mean, if he goes deep, he's going to get some huge number. And then, do you want to pay it? And can the Leafs pay it given their other, you know, considerations? I just think that Samsonov is probably going to price himself out of Toronto. I think it's going to be probably similar to the Jack Campbell situation where he can get more on the open market than Toronto's going to want to pay him. And that, I mean, so, but I can just see like in the fan base and in the media and like what Wool's such a great story and such a likable personality.
Yeah.
That people want him to succeed. I mean, it's natural, but I think the good news for, you know, this is, I think that this goalie talk is coming across a little bit doom and gloom or something like that. The good news is that they've got three guys. Goaltending hasn't really been the problem of their season. Like it's not overall, their like save percentage numbers and goals saved above expected are fine. There should be one of those three guys that can play well. Although if you're in a playoff series and you get down to your third guy, you know, you might be in trouble at that point, but. You know, I don't know.
I agree with that. I think the goaltending has been okay. I don't think the goaltending has been good. Like they are.
I think that's what I'm saying, though, Jonas. Like I don't think goaltending's been bad. I don't think it's been this. I don't think it's been the story of their season. Like I don't.
No,
think
that's that, right. I agree with that. They're 18th in 5-on-5 save percentage this season. I think they're worse. I know that from checking the other day overall because their penalty kill's been so bad. But yeah, you're right. Like it hasn't been like death, but it does feel like
average. It's been their goaltending's been average. I mean, and that's including Samsonov having the complete meltdown early in the year.
Yeah. Well, you look at it now. I'm just doing it off the top of my head. I looked at this this morning. I think Wall is at 908, Jones is at 908, and Samsonov, I believe, is at like 898, something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like our producer brings up Frederik Andersen. And I think like you mentioned Campbell, Andersen, Campbell, Samsonov, there are like a lot of similarities between those guys. There's just like a little something there that you're just like, we'll see. Like Samsonov played well in the playoffs last year in that first round and then obviously got hurt.
This is where goaltending in the NHL is going, man. Like it's just unpredictable. You know, teams think, you know, you look at New Jersey, like they thought they had guys with Vanacek, remember last year? And,
yeah.
Who was the backup for them last year? Was it Schmid or was it?
Yeah, it was
Mackenzie Blackwood. You know, they thought that they maybe had something with those guys last year. They have a good season. Come into this year, their goaltending falls apart and they're going to miss the playoffs. Like it, you know, and then conversely, you look around the league and then there's been like surprisingly positive stories in net and those teams do I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example here. I mean, like, look at the year that Demko's had compared to the year that he had before. Or look at the year that,
yeah, you're right.
Markstrom had in Calgary, and, you know, LA's had really weird stuff going on with their goalies, and everyone thought that was going to be the story of their season.
No, Edmonton, but James, like, to your point, like, you look at the playoff teams, even the playoff teams, like, you can go through them one by one. There's not a lot of them that are just like, yeah, we're amazing in goal. Like, just look at it. Like, Boston, I think, thinks they're good, which they should be. I think Florida probably thinks they're good. New York probably thinks they're good.
Dallas.
I'm just going to go through the East, and I'll go to the West. Carolina, no. Philly, no. Tampa, yes, but, like, it's not been amazing. Washington, no. Dallas, yeah, but, like, Ottinger hasn't had an amazing year. Georgiev has won a ton of games, but, like, it's not like he's, like, the next guy. He's not Hellebuck. You mentioned Demko. The Oilers have Skinner. Like, that's, like, the same sort of... you know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, not a ton of teams have it. Saros, obviously, in Nashville, is that what we're talking about? But, I mean, Adin Hill wins the Cup last year, and he was, like, traded for a fourth-round pick.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway.
I think it's just getting to the point with goalies where you want to have two or three guys. Like, five teams carried three goalies this year, and you just go with who's playing well in the moment. So, I think... I don't know. I don't know that goaltending is going to lose them the series in the playoffs. Maybe it will. Maybe I'll be wrong, but, like,
I'm sure I just don't think, probably annoyed with that comment.
I don't think
knocking on wood.
But I can't. How can I jinx the? Neutral party. I'm not cheering for them to win or lose. So, like, I don't think I can jinx them by saying something. I'm just saying what I think potentially. I don't feel like goaltending is the story of their season. I mean, their goaltending has been kind of wacky in the way that, you know, like, their starter ends up on waivers and then takes some time off and comes back and plays great. And Martin Jones played a long stretch of games really well and then has barely been seen since. And their goaltending situation has been a bit strange, but...
A bit, you know, very strange, James. It's been very strange. Their apparent number one goalie heading into the season was placed on waivers and was waived.
Like, I just said that.
Yeah, like, but so, yeah, that's unusual.
Leafs are built, they got to outscore some of their issues, right? And that could include, you know, maybe not always getting every save that they want.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, James, since we last spoke, some developments, obviously. The Leafs have had a lot of, like, fluctuation on defense. I was going through this the other day. Really, like, no team has had to play this many guys in this many games. But TJ Brody, the decision that they made to scratch him, it felt like something was going to come because it just wasn't going well for him. Do you like the decision they made to just take him out for a couple games and give him a breather?
Well, let me ask you this, like, why not just put him on the third pair instead of sitting him entirely? Like, it feels like he's been on the top pair and getting tough matchups all year. Dom, our analytics guy, posted a chart, and Brody's had some of the toughest minutes of any defenseman in the NHL all season. So I think it's fine to sit him for a game or two. I just wonder, I don't know. Yeah, obviously he hasn't been playing well. I'd like to see Brody in like a third pair role and see if he looks any better.
Yeah, but see,
in
an
ideal world, you could use him in the playoffs.
100%. But the issue is when you're mostly a defensive fives and sixes, and you want to put Brody as your five or your six, that means you got to move someone else up, and they just don't have great options. Like, so what would you do? So like, let's say I'm assuming you would keep Riley and Lyubushkin together, right?
I just mean for the what's left of the regular season, like start playing Brody further down your lineup and just see if you can use him there or not, because I don't even know if he's in the playoff lineup at this point, Jonas. So like, you know, never mind like playing him higher in the lineup. I think that what you probably do is, I guess Riley McCabe is probably what you do at the top.
Yeah. Sheldon Keefe is not a big fan of that. We know that, but okay. Yeah. I don't mind that, but yeah.
Well, so if you had to build a defense without TJ Brody, like what are you doing? Like that Riley and Lyubushkin we know that Riley and Liljegren doesn't work great.
So you could go Riley, Lyubushkin,
McCabe.
Yeah, you could try that. I don't hate that. You could try McCabe and Liljegren. You could try Benoit and McCabe. That feels like a stretch for Benoit. You could go like there's different directions you can go, but none of them are just like. I trust Brody still more than I would most of those guys, even with everything that's gone on.
Do you trust him against like top lines though? Like, do you trust him against Pasternak and Barkov?
No, but who do I trust is the question.
I think you got to start looking for something else there, right? Like, and I know they've been trying some different pairs of late, like since the trade deadline, Brody's sat
twice.
He sat the two games. Yeah.
But first game, James, he played his fewest minutes of the season. He played 17 minutes. So that was what you're talking about, basically.
Yeah, I think I think that's what I would do for the next like five or six games and just see like where he's at. You know, sounds like, you know, there was the death of his father, which I think impacted his offseason, understandably. And he just hasn't looked right all year. And he also didn't play great in the playoffs last year either.
No. I mean, I can see two options. Like what they did in that Carolina game, to me, is very likely what they would do to start the playoffs, and that was Riley Lyubushkin, Brody McCabe, Edmondson, Liljegren. And you don't really they don't really have like a go-to matchup pair. You just kind of roll three pairs. Maybe you prefer Brody McCabe in certain situations, but like you're not really favoring one pair over the other. Like that's kind of what they did a little bit last year. Didn't work. Great. You could also do, James, what you're talking about. You could go Riley with McCabe, Brody with Lyubushkin, Edmondson with Liljegren. I don't hate that either. But Keith really feels like playing Riley with McCabe. It's like he thinks McCabe in the offensive zone, especially, is a little too not similar, but
he
more
does like wander.
Right, exactly. And so suddenly you have two guys wandering.
It's interesting, you know, looking at the minutes since the deadline, since they added Edmondson at 5-on-5 on the blue line, the minutes are very even. You know, Riley's playing about 17 a game.
Yep.
McCabe's 16.5. Liljegren 16. Edmondson 14.5. Like everybody's between like 14.5 minutes and 17. Everybody at 5-on-5. So there's not like this huge gap. Like what you see on a lot of teams in the salary cap era is the top pair plays the most. The second pair plays a lot over 20. And then your third pair doesn't get a lot of minutes. And that happens a lot in the playoffs. If you look closely at it, like some teams, if they have a really good top four, they'll only play their third pair, you know, 12, 13 minutes. But that hasn't been the way they've been rolling it out here the last couple of weeks.
It kind of feels like that's what they're going to have to do just based on the personnel that they have. Like this
defense
was why
by
we,
committee?
Yeah, I hate that. I get why that's what they're calling it. I don't.
Are they calling it that? I didn't hear them call it that, but
yeah, no, they really are. And basically what that means is like, we don't have enough really good defensemen. So we're just going to kind of split it up and hope that that's enough. And that's why, like, we talked for months and months and months about how are they going to find a defenseman to do this. And they didn't. And like, to your point that you made to me in our conversations, they had the John Klingberg money to play with and they just didn't use it. And we'll see. Like, we'll see if this is enough, because that was the risk in not doing something more substantial than they did.
You know, they're going to have to just play Labushkin and Edmondson more. Like, they're going to have to be more than third pair guys. I mean, if Brody can't get it done, like, there's not really a lot of other alternatives.
Yeah, I like, do you still think that there's a way back for Brody? Like, how much of this do you think is, like, it's hard to say, right? Like, you mentioned the personal stuff. That's brutal at any time. And, like, but he's also 33. Like, and I think he'll be 34 in June, if I'm not mistaken. Like, this is kind of when it happens. And he does not look like the same skater he used to. And everything just looks harder for him.
His confidence seems completely shot. Like, he's just making bizarre plays with the puck. And
yeah,
I'm not sure that I do see a way back for him to the top pair, to that matchup pair.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Edmonton game, this is going to get hard. Maybe I should call it the Oilers game. If I call it the Edmonton game and it's all about Edmondson, that could be get kind of confusing.
Yeah. Edmondson
played really well against Edmonton.
Yep.
And he looked great. Like, what did he play? He played like 23 minutes, right?
He did, yeah.
He got the belt. He was the possession expected goals leader on the team. And he was just a beast, you know? Like, he was just crushing Draisaitl, McDavid. And you see that, and it's like, man, like, this is... You could see that in a playoff series, how hard he would be to play against.
Well, and their top... Yeah. Go ahead.
If Edmondson's health holds up, I know he's had back issues, and, you know, I look at it too, and it's like, why was Washington, a team that doesn't have a deep blue line, why were they only playing this guy 15 minutes a night? Like, that doesn't seem to make any sense.
Kind of does. Like, he's kind of a big, slow, meat and potatoes kind of defenseman, and they're like, I don't know, who do you want to play more than? Like, I don't know. I don't have a problem with that, but yeah, like, Their top four that night, James, was Riley, McCabe, Edmondson, Liljegren. I don't know. Maybe you come around to that. Like, they're just going to be trying whatever works. And, like, if game one goes poorly, they might just try something else. Yeah. Like, maybe Benoit doesn't play game one, but suddenly he plays game two. So
Benoit seems like a guy whose confidence is a little bit shot too, like, coming in and out of the lineup.
Well, and it's kind of come back to earth for him a little bit, especially when he's not played with McCabe. He's had a really good year for him. But yeah. Before we get to my next thing and questions, is there something you wanted to talk about? I didn't ask you.
No, I finally get it's my time to shine.
Yeah, but four questions.
Take the next 10 minutes to just talk about Dune and how good the sequel was.
Oh, you had a good nap. Well, that's good.
No, I did not have a nap. It's pretty hard to nap when they got that whatever they call the sound system now. It's not a quiet movie. It's not the kind of movies you like, where you can sleep in the lazy boy chair, the VIP theater.
Yeah.
It's not. I was gonna say some movie, but I don't want to insult anyone's favorite movie here, so I won't do it.
Okay. Well, so since you have nothing else to talk about, I wanted to get your take on the Domi Matthews combination, because there is something interesting going on there. Obviously, Domi makes a bad decision at the end of the New Jersey game, but and one thing I've noticed, and I actually looked into this, really has trouble hitting the net. He has missed the net a lot, but he has found a way to bring some of that Marner, like, I'm going to find Matthews energy. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of see a path, and this is something you and I have been talking about, to him staying on that line even when Mitch Marner comes back. Do you like that idea? Do you think it's too risky? Do you think it's worth taking a look at?
Yeah, I think it's worth looking at. I think that's the right... You know, I know the Leafs are thinking about it, you know, so they're wondering if... You know, it's since the trade deadline, the top player on the whole team in expected goals in the analytics is Max Domi. You know, and that's getting they've been using that line in the offensive zone quite a bit. You know, he's been getting, you know, it's not like when he plays with Matthews, it's not like they use Matthews in exactly the same way where it's like,
no, they're not.
Yeah. So in that kind of a role where, you know, Domi's with Matthews and not playing always against other teams' top lines and not always in the D zone. Yeah, I think he can be effective, but he can also hurt you like he did in the New Jersey game. You know, like that's what you have to worry about. And the other thing I wonder too, Jonas, is can you play Domi and Marner on a line with Matthews when both those guys are pass first, when both Domi and Marner are going to want it? Like,
it's a really interesting question.
You can, but you're going to have to say to Domi and Marner, like, you guys got to shoot it more than you usually do. And you got to hit the net.
See, I'm as worried about, and it's funny, like, I was not the biggest fan, obviously, of Domi playing as a center, or let alone like a top nine center, whatever. But suddenly, if you put Domi up there, you've got a real question is like, okay, who are your other centers? Like, obviously, Matthews, obviously, Tavares. But like, who's your third center? And what kind of line are you building that actually makes any sense? So like, hypothetically, if you went Domi, Matthews, Marner, and then let's say you wanted to go Bertuzzi, Tavares, Nylander. All right. So then like, what's your third line? Is it like Kampf with Knies and Yarncroc? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what are you doing?
They've been burying Kampf again and just they're trying to get him back to where he was in the past, where it's all D zone draws and you play him with a couple guys who can skate and their goal is just to not give up anything and get the puck, you know, either to the neutral zone or the offensive zone and change and get someone out there who can score. The problem is for me, like the third line is like, you know, I don't know. Like, there's not getting. Are you getting the third line against New Jersey was Nyes, Holmberg,
Robertson, and they were pretty good, but they also gave up a goal.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is. I almost think even with all the issues with the defense that we talked about in the last little stretch there, I almost think that adding a center was probably a bigger need for them at the deadline. And maybe that's like us talking about spilled milk and whatever. But, you know, I look at the Rangers. They brought in Wennberg, and all of a sudden they look like they have three lines that can really give them something. Edmonton brought in Henrique. I look at their three lines, and it's like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. And I look at Toronto, and you look at their three lines, and it's like, man, like they're going to have to play really well defensively. And again, like we're talking about lines where they're missing Marner and Yarncroc, so things are going to be different. When everyone's healthy, it's not going to be the same as it was against New Jersey. But even still, I think you're flagging the right thing in that who's going to be your center on that third line. And I like Domi better on the wing. If you put him on the wing with good players, I think he can be a really good facilitator for offense. But the fact that they don't really have someone that makes sense for the third line center makes that harder to do.
Yeah. I would just like, if I'm them, I think that they've done actually a good job with him since the start of the year. He's not made as many of those type of plays as he makes in the New Jersey game, but they're going to really have to be on him to like really take care of the puck in the playoffs, because like that stuff will kill you, as we've seen in Toronto with certain players over the years.
I mean, Domi's been in the league a long time. I mean, he is what he is. I mean, he's a very talented offensive player there's high risk, high reward with him. That's who they signed. That's what he's going to be.
Yeah. So fair enough. Yeah.
I don't mind the idea of using him as a weapon with Matthews, because obviously there's chemistry there. He can play with good players and he can facilitate for them and he can make amazing offensive plays. But you got to figure out what's going on down the lineup. It's too bad that Yarncroc can't come in and play center, because I feel like...
Yeah, it doesn't work.
I feel like that would be... I know he played some center in Nashville, but... That's kind of what they need. They don't need like a world beater. They need someone who's slightly better than Kampf, who has a little bit of offense to play down the middle.
I mean, one of the guys that I highlighted at some point during the year was Granlund. And obviously his contract is not good. He has another year, I believe, at five. But like if you had gotten that at half, like that's not bad. Like suddenly your third line's like Yarncroc, Granlund, and Knies or McMahon, or that's something. Like, but obviously they chose not to do it. They chose not to pay some of the prices that were paid.
What do you see from the center that they did bring in, Connor Dewar? He's played 8 games. He's playing about a little over 10 minutes, even strength a night. Like, do you see anything there that says to you that in the playoffs he should be a regular for them?
Well, he's mostly played the wing, which has been interesting. Like, they basically connected him with Camp. Mm-hmm. I like him. Like, I don't mind him. Like, I think he brings something that they needed on the penalty kill. But he's just kind of, he's not going to give you much offense. He's going to be someone you can trust, but like, is Keith going to put him on the ice? You know, like, I think back to last year, James, when they had Noel Achary, and like, obviously he has his limitations, but game on the line, Keith put him on the ice. And I just don't know if Dewar is that guy. Maybe they couldn't get that guy. Maybe he's the best facsimile that they could get for the price that they wanted to pay. Again, like, he does help their penalty kill, but I do think he'll be in their playoff lineup. Do you?
Yeah, I think so. And I think what they're going to do is they're going to build a defense first line around Kampf that's not going to give you hardly any offense, but that is just, it's kind of like the old nothing line that Anaheim had when they won the cup. It's just like, try and get them out there and, you know, don't allow more goals.
Don't get scored on.
Yeah. Like, you know, since the trade deadline, I think Kampf's been on for two.
He's been really good.
Two even strength goals, 4 in 8 games, and only 1 against. And that's what you want. Like, there's not a lot going on when he's out there. And if you look at the scoring chances and all that stuff, they're about even. That's what you want from him. You play him in tough minutes. You break even on chances. You hopefully break even on goals, or maybe come out a little bit ahead. And, you know, and he's facilitating giving those easier minutes that I'm talking about that Matthews and Domi have been getting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a positive development for him, for them, that he's kind of turned his season around.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Let's get to some questions.
Do you have any questions about the movie Dune 2?
I've actually heard it's quite good. I will see it. I promise you.
Okay. Well, I know you didn't like the first one, so.
I think I need to rewatch the first one, but I found the first one pretty not fun.
I just thought it was... You crapped on the first one so many times on this show. And then it was like, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago? And you're like, I think I'm going to see Dune 2. And I was like, what? You hated the first one. Why are you seeing that? It's like, well, I heard it was good. It's like, well, the first one was good. I don't know.
And the first one was...
I went back and I watched the one from 1984. They made a Dune movie in 1984, and it was David Lynch. And one of the characters is played by Sting, the musician.
Wow.
And he's one of the bad guys. And at some points in the movie, all he's wearing is this weird codpiece thing.
Dune 1, by the way, James, got 83% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, I thought it got more than that. Are you looking
at the audience? 90.
No. Oh, I'm surprised. You know what? Part 1 was a bit like, it was a bit dense. Like, it was complicated and like, you know. So, but I don't know. That's the kind of stuff that I love. So, you know, and that's a dense book too. So if you're going to make sense that the show would be dense anyway, people can send us their comments can be about their feelings on Dune 2. I highly recommend it. I loved it. I thought it was great. So people should go see it. All right. Questions. So the number one question is not what you would expect. I don't think you'd never guess. You'd never guess who it's about. So this is going to be coming out of left field for you. It's about Brendan Shanahan. And for some reason, this is, we've been getting a lot of these questions. Sander is the name of the questioner. Sander wants to know, has Brendan Shanahan been this invisible in previous seasons? Do you have any insight into his future beyond this year? Shanahan likes to keep a low profile. He definitely does. I'm sure, Jonas, you see him around practice.
Well, what do you think the questioner means by invisible?
Like, just like not talking publicly, not, you know, not having a presence.
So yeah, like, you know, this, he does not do that. He has not done that for years. He is around every day, based, not every day, but he's around most days. Like, I see him at practice. I see him at skates. He's around their dressing room. He's around the team. Like, obviously he's the president, but he's never, like, aside from, like, he would occasionally do something at the start of a year, occasionally at the end of a year, but that's kind of all he likes to do in terms of media.
I think it's like partly strategic, like I think, but I think it's also he wants the GM to be, you know, the face of things and have the one message and not have them kind of have dueling messages out there in the world.
Yeah, I think that's fair too.
The second part of the question, do you have any insight into his future beyond this year? He signed a 6-year contract extension in 2019. So that contract, he's got one more year after this year on that 6-year extension that he got, ends in 2025. And at that point, at the end of next year, he will have been here 11 years. At this point, he's been here almost 10 years. Like, I think it's in April, it'll be 10 years. So I would be surprised if they make a change this year, but...
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't know anything. Like, I'm just based on the track record, if you've been around 10 years and they don't have a more substantial playoff record and they have a new, you know, MLSE president coming in, like, it's going to get hard to kind of build a case. No?
Well, you know how, like, slow things work with this stuff though, right? Like, sometimes it can just, like, take a long time for, especially if there's changes at the top. Maybe it depends how disappointing it is. Like, if they just get blown out in the first round, then I could see ownership being really unhappy. You know, but if they lose in the first round, there's going to be blood for sure. I just am not sure if they're going to be at the point where it's the president at this point.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the reaction to that would be, because, like, it would be hard not to look at his record and say, like, a lot has been good. But they've also made, anyway, we'll cover that if that happens. Like, it feels like they need a long playoff run for there not to be substantial change. And yet, we've said that repeatedly over the years, and there has not been substantial change aside from the GM.
It's okay. So, we're going to be right this time. But hopefully for all the Leafs fans listening, hopefully for your sake, we don't have to do that show.
Sure. So, yeah.
Kyle wants to know, after seeing historic teams like Tampa and Boston lose in round one and others with no expectations like Vegas, Montreal, St. Louis, and Florida go deep, is it worth putting any stock in the regular season? Sure, there are habits and systems and stuff to work on, but it feels like a crapshoot for all the teams come game one after such a long regular season. I mean, it is a bit of a crapshoot. And I think this season, I mean, you look at the standings, like, aren't there, there's like 8 teams separated by 3 points right now. Yesterday, it was there were 8 teams separated by, I think, 1 or 2 points. You know, all the way, Carolina's in 7th place right now with 97 points, and New York's in 1st with 100. So there's a huge logjam at the top. I think it's wide open this year, really. I mean, look how hot Nashville's been lately. Tampa's been playing really well. One of those teams, you know, Tampa's got the 13th best record in the league. I mean, it wouldn't shock anybody to see them go on a run.
No. Yeah, you could pick any one of those first 10 teams, 8 teams, 9 teams, and be like, yeah, they could win. Like, Rangers, yeah. Canucks.
I mean, Vegas is in 14th in the league. I mean, they could win.
They could absolutely.
I think LA could win. Like, sure, I mean, yeah. it's about as wide open as I think I've ever seen it.
The one thing, though, James, that I noticed, I looked into this like a few months back, the teams that tend to win the cup are good defensive teams, like, almost without exception. Like, they're either top 5 or top 10.
Do you mean in the regular season?
I mean, in the regular season, like 5-on-5, if you look at like the expected goal number, they're all very good.
Where does the Leafs rank currently in 5-on-5 expected goals against for the season?
Not in the top 10 or top 5.
Ruh-roh.
And their penalty kill is obviously a problem.
Yeah.
We talked about, I believe, last podcast, but
you don't see a lot of teams winning the cup that have like a 75% penalty kill or whatever they're at right at this point.
Yeah. So right now, 5-on-5, they're like 21st.
In what?
Expected goals against per 60.
Okay, so that doesn't fit with your trend. Maybe they will buck the trend. Maybe it'll be started with a new trend for us.
That would be on par for the brand. Just do
optimism corner.
Sure, why not? I mean, they can win. They can win. Like they have like the top line talent that they can absolutely win. So
they need the stars to produce. They need one of the goalies to play well, and they need the blue line to not suck, for lack of a better term.
A lot of things.
I mean, the team that wins a lot of things go right.
Sure.
Right? Like, Nicholas wants to know, can Austin Matthews be the leader for a Stanley Cup champion team? What insight do you have being close to him as to what kind of a leader he is, what motivates him, how he intends on elevating his game this time around? Can he be a McKinnon, Crosby, Jonathan Taves, and will his team to the ultimate prize? Sometimes it feels like he's a top five talent, but not the ultimate leader. I mean, this happens where he hasn't come through in the playoffs in dominated, right? Like he's won them some games, but it hasn't looked the same way it has in the regular season where I mean, he's the best goal scorer in the world. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. You know, he's significantly ahead in the ability to put pucks in the net, especially at even strength. But that hasn't come through in the playoffs. So until he does it, I get it. I think there's going to be doubters. What have we seen from Matthews? I mean, Matthews is a relatively quiet person, right? Like if he's going to be a leader, it's going to be more like the Steve Yzerman strong silent type.
Well, I believe for a long time, like Steve Yzerman was not thought of as a winner I don't know if he was thought of as a leader, but then they started winning cups and like, this guy's the best leader.
No, people used to say he wasn't. I remember those years well. Like it wasn't until just to tie this back to the first question, Brendan Shanahan came in. They brought him in that big trade. I think it was Primo and Coffey going out the other way. And the Red Wings finally broke through in, say, 97. So in 97, Yzerman would have been 32 years old.
Yeah.
And if I got my dates right, that would have been his first cup. And he had been a star. Like he had 155 points in 89. You know, like he was a superstar. He was one of the best players in the league, but it was always with caveats. And I mean, Ovechkin was around the same age when he won too. And people were saying, you can't win with this guy and he doesn't play good enough defense. And it's hard to win. It's hard in the playoffs. And Matthews is what? Is he 26 this year?
He's 26, yeah.
I mean, this should be his prime. This should be the time where, and he knows he needs to deliver more in the playoffs. So, and from everyone that knows him well says he's hyper, hyper competitive person. So we'll see. I mean, I think that that ability exists in there, but until people see it in the playoffs, I totally understand why people would doubt it. Mm-hmm. Jesse wants to know, is Paul McLean still with the team?
I have not seen Paul McLean all season, so that would be my answer.
He is no longer the eye in the sky.
Our producer Punch says Paul McLean is writing for NHL.com this season, so there you go. You have any other questions? Any good ones?
Yeah, I'm looking. Dawid wants to know, why are there so many guys named Connor in the NHL? You have anything on that? He says Connor McDavid, Connor Brown, Connor Dewar, Connor McMichael, Connor Ingram. I think it's a good Canadian name, isn't it? Isn't that why?
Is it a Canadian name? I don't know if it's a Canadian name. But yeah, it's a good name.
Philip says, why haven't the Leafs, with all their money, coaching resources, scouting resources, analytics, been able to draft and develop a true number one goalie or a true number one defenseman in the last 30 years? Well, for a long stretch of those 30 years, they weren't, I was going to say sucked, but they weren't good. They weren't good. And they drafted poorly. And how many, they haven't really drafted a lot of goalies high up, right? Like Tuukka Rask. There's one that they drafted.
He was good.
There's one pick that they nailed.
Yeah. And Morgan Riley is not quite like a 1-1 in terms of what the question I think is asking, but he's a really good defenseman. Obviously, he's taken top five. They take Luke Shen high. He doesn't become that. Yeah, like, I mean, they haven't, that's been a big part of this. They haven't nailed those picks. And obviously, they nailed the picks with Matthews, and that's an easy pick, obviously. Marner and Nylander, like, they hit on some of those, and that's why they are where they are.
I got one more question. Ryan wants to know, is Jake Muzzin still around the team? Have you seen Jake Muzzin hanging around?
Yeah, I still see him the odd time at some games, whether it's on the road, whether sometimes it's at home. He's a scout, so that's kind of his life now. And like, honestly, James, like, I was looking back at some of their rosters in previous seasons for a story that hasn't come out, and I don't know if it will come out, but he was such like an integral part of their defense and their team, and like, they've just never really been able to get over that and understand it.
Some guys on the team told me that he was like the second captain, basically. Like, he was like, you know, and more vocal than Tavares. And I know some of the younger guys looked up to Muzzin so much.
Yeah. And that's another dimension. Like, I just meant on the ice, but yeah, like even off the ice, like he was like, Mitch Marner was obviously very close with him. Yeah. They lose that. And that's just been really hard for them to replace. Like, he was a really difficult guy to replace because he brought such like a unique skill set. So anyway, he's around. So the Leafs have an important week coming up. Obviously, they've got a couple games before then. They play Thursday, Washington. May listen to this before then, after then. Then they've got Buffalo. Then they've got Florida at home on Monday. And then Tampa Wednesday. And then in Montreal the following Saturday. So some interesting stuff to watch. James, I suspect we'll be back on Thursday.
I think we should go earlier.
Okay. All right. So we will be back next week. Thank you to Punch. Thanks to you, James. Thank you to everyone for listening. Any parting thoughts before we go?
No, I just go see Dune 2 and get one of those big Lazy Boy chairs and order a drink, and highly recommend it.
All right. I'll do it. Thanks, James.